hands, so tall that she could fit within them. With agonizing slowness, she began the transfer from the inner to the outer surface, relying on the traction from her tarred feet to anchor her to the cold metal. Against Nona's expectation, she reached the top of the first spiral. Nona turned to see the dial, now almost through a complete circuit. How long will it take her? A wail of rage and despair cut her off. Far below them, Ketty hit the net and bounced, screaming in frustration.
She does better than that normally, Gaina said.
You go, Nona,
Clara gestured towards the start point. Nona glanced at the resin pot in Clara's hand, but Clara looked away, leaning over to tease Ketty, who was now scrambling for the edge of the net by the door. Gaina pulled the lever which trapped the pendulum at the end of its swing, and set the dial to its original position. Turning back, she nodded to the dark patch on the platform just where the pipe started.
Stamp about there. You'll get your soul sticky enough. Mistress Blade has the path cleaned every day. We think she must have a deal with the resin sellers, but she doesn't tell us to clean the platform. So we don't.
Nona slipped her shoes off. The tar and resin felt tacky under her toes. She tried to concentrate on the sensation rather than all the empty space between her and the ground. Clara's hoarding of her resin pot hurt her a little, but Nona knew that need and generosity have their own cycles. In hungry times, the village was wont to share food, but when the hunger built to a certain point, everybody, even the kindest of them, closed in on themselves, sharing only with their closest family. Perhaps there even came a point when famine could stop mother feeding child. Nona understood better than most that even the most sacred bonds could be broken under enough stress. Clara wasn't hungry, but she was once rich, and now was not. Perhaps to someone raised in luxury that was like starvation. Nona tried to push thoughts of her mother aside and seal her anger away. Gritting her teeth, she stepped forward. The pipe shifted beneath her foot the moment she pressed down. Far below, the net trembled.
"The convent keeps records of the best times," Clara said. "The best time in each class in each year, the best time in the whole year, the best time ever."
The lever made a deep clunk as Gaina set the pendulum going again. Nona found her other foot glued to the platform by more than a sticky patch of floor. No part of her wanted to commit herself to the path. She had never been a great climber of trees, fearing the helplessness of the fall almost as much as the pain of reunion with the ground.
"Go on,"
Clara urged. The sound of footsteps on the stairs behind her pushed Nona out over the drop. Shame can exert as much pressure as anger. She put her arms out and slowed the turning of the world just a fraction. Balance relies on an understanding of the motion of things, of swing, of momentum, of the constraints that gravity's laws place on all matter, be it flesh or stone. Slow the world too much and you lose that intuition. You break your concentration to the interlinked web of moving pieces. And while you may fall by degrees, taking an age to realize you've passed the point of no return, you will still fall. The slope of the path pulled at Nona, her feet on the point of slipping at every moment. The pipe swayed treacherously. She came to the curve, her shallow breaths drawn in time to the motion of her body as she struggled to stay upright. Her arms ached already, as if she were hanging by them, not merely balancing. Somehow she made it around the first long and descending curve. The steep rise of the corkscrew seemed an impossible barrier, lifting above her head in the space of a few strides. Nona took it in tiny steps, hearing nothing but the rasp of her breath and the pounding of her heart. To her surprise, she found herself at the top of the spiral's first turn, staring down at the impossibly steep descent to the bottom of the next turn. She knew her feet would slip there, with the path running away from her.
"Go on!"
shouted from the platform, almost angry. Nona held for a moment, with the drop to every side screaming for her to fall, the tension in her legs unbearable. Then she jumped. Her lead foot caught the top of the next loop of the spiral, and, swinging her trailing leg, thrusting up with both arms, she carried on to the top of the third and final loop, where, with arms pinwheeling, she caught herself with one foot. She had in two leaps carried herself to a point a little over a quarter of the way along the blade path. Nona brought her other foot onto the pipe, and, with the exaggerated care of a drunkard, turned to the side. In that moment, she saw the other novices crowded onto the platform, staring at her, mouths open. It was a look she knew. The same shock had registered on Amondo's face when she had learned too quickly to do his tricks. It was the start of a look that ended in hurt and anger. Nona's heel slipped from the iron pipe. She let out a yelp and fell backwards. By the time she hit the net, she was screaming. She bounced twice and rolled over, wheezing as she tried to draw the air back into her lungs. An awkward scramble brought her to the edge of the net, and strong hands helped her down. She found herself looking up into the impish eyes of Sister Kettle, who had last appeared behind Sister Apple in the steams of the bathhouse.
"Well, that was unorthodox," Sister Kettle smiled. "Not strictly what I would call following the path, but an impressive piece of acrobatics even so."
How long?"
Nona heaved in a breath.
"Did you take," Sister Kettle looked up at the platform, "Gaina, how long before she fell?"
1 and 20.
1 cycle and 20, Sister Kettle repeated.
"That's 80 counts. Do you know what your class record is for completion,
Nona?"
"No." "Guess."
Nona tried to imagine it.
300 counts?
"Ketty?"
Sister Kettle asked.
"Nobody currently in red has completed the blade path. Suleri was the last to finish it while still in red. Her count was 290.
Ketty was standing by the door. Her eyes flitted to the path above them.
"I've almost made it to the end, though."
"Almost?"
"Suleri can do it faster now," Sister Kettle said, turning for the door. "She's the fastest novice still at the convent. Her record is 118.
"What's the fastest it was ever done?"
Nona asked. Sister Kettle paused, the door half open.
"Our records say that a little over 200 years ago, a certain Sister Owl, yes, the one in the stories, the Black Fort and all that, the ledgers record her setting a time in Holy Class of 26 counts. It does seem hard to credit, though. Perhaps the timing mechanism has been adjusted over the years."
26?
Nona blinked. It didn't sound even vaguely possible.
"Something to aim for."
Sister Kettle went through the door with a slight limp, leaving Nona and Ketty to stare at each other. Way above them, Ruli started out on the path.
"Why was Sister Kettle here?"
Nona asked, to break the silence more than anything.
"To watch the new girl, of course," Ketty said. "She'll be reporting back to Sister Tallow. That's what she does. Watches and reports. She'd be Mistress Shade if we didn't already have the poisoner, I expect."
She paused as Ruli plummeted down into the net with a shriek of frustration.
"I expect she'd have come anyway to size up the competition. Kettle holds the convent record for the blade path. The record for anyone still living here. 69 counts.
Nona tried the path half a dozen more times, moving less quickly and falling. Not to stay part of the group, but because gravity seemed to have got its hooks into her. Quite how she had got so far before, she couldn't say, for now the path swayed beneath her like a foreign sea, its ways alien to her feet. Even so, she got further along than Ruli, Gaina, and poor Karis, who barely made the first yard and never the third. The sixth impact with the net left her ears ringing.
"Bray!"
Clara shouted.
"Oh, hells!"
She dropped off the platform, habit swirling about her head, long legs out before her. Nona hung on tight to the ropes. The only rule they told her was not to try the path while someone is still in the net, as you could bounce them out. Clara scrambled for the edge.
"We'll be late for Spirit!"
Nona glanced up at the platform. Empty. She and Clara had been so deep in their competition they hadn't seen the others leave.
"Come on!"
Clara tossed Nona her shoes and dropped to the floor.
"Mistress Spirit is the worst!"
"I thought you said the poisoner was the worst."
"They're all the worst when you're late."
And Clara was running. Chapter 9. Racing around the dome of the ancestor, Nona started to think that the place had no door. Her breath came ragged and Clara's long legs were opening a lead. The pain of a stitch stabbed beneath her lungs and she slowed, grabbing her side. Fortunately, a few more paces brought sight of the great doors that she had seen on her first night. The line of Red Class was already filing in through the narrow gap where a hand held the leftmost door ajar. Clara and Nona joined the end of the line, sweaty and breathless, just as Ketty and Ruli slipped through ahead of them. Ketty had to duck below the hand which turned out to be attached to Sister Wheel. Nona scowled, having yet to forgive the nun for turfing her from her bed with such holy zeal on her first morning at the convent.
"Quickly, quietly!"
Sister Wheel ushered them on. At first the dim light yielded only an impression of great columns and a polished floor, with some brighter space beyond. Nona followed Clara's back, blinking to help her eyes adjust. They were in a grand foyer that itself was bigger than all but the richest houses in Verity. Sister Wheel led them along the wall to the left, towards a small door at the side of the foyer, as if allowing novices to venture any further in would sully so holy a place. From the view of the interior, glimpsed between sleek columns of black marble, Nona understood the space to be both singular and vast, lit by scores of long and narrow windows radiating from the dome's apex, with the statue gleaming at the center, tiny in such a space, but far bigger than a man. The pull that Nona had felt that first night in the nun's cells was here, too. Not so strong as it had been when she stood just yards from the black door that entered the rear of the dome, but there even so. The huge and echoing space, the sunlight shafting in through many windows, the golden statue. They were grand things, impressive, perhaps even holy. But they were not the source. Something filled that dome almost to bursting, but its center lay deeper.
"Nona!"
Clara at the open side door beckoning.
"Stop dawdling!"
Nona hurried on into a small classroom dimly lit by three of the high portal windows that formed a ring perforating the wall of the great dome.
"Late to class but never late to dinner!"
Sister Wheel's fingernails-on-slate voice reached a surprising volume as she pointed Nona and Clara out in the doorway. This seemed a harsh judgment to Nona, who had attended just one convent dinner so far. The sister stood at the far end of the classroom in one of the circles of light cast by the windows, the white funnel of her headdress all aglow, and the wisps of grey hair that escaped it seeming to float about her face.
"Come along! The road to damnation is paved with tardy steps!"
Nona hurried to an empty desk near the door, head down, puzzling over how a road might be paved with steps. Clara took the next desk along, flashing a grin towards her. Fishing in her habit, she pulled out a tightly rolled scroll of parchment, a slate, a piece of chalk, a small and stoppered pot, and a quill. This latter gave the impression that the bird from which it was taken had died of some wasting disease, falling from its perch into a dirty puddle before being run over by several carts, and finally thoroughly chewed by a hungry cat. The novices at the other desks already had their scrolls unrolled before them, some dipping their quills into inkpots. Arabella's quill caught the light, becoming something ethereal. A perfect swan's feather, pristine and glistening.
"We will continue with the 18th part of the catechism. Later I will be examining you and the names of the saints, the dates of their name days, and the services and traditions particular to each. New girl, get your parchment and quill out, or do you not consider my remarks worthy of record?
No. Laughter on all sides. Arabella's a musical peal.
I mean, yes, Sister Wheel.
Sister Wheel? There's no Sister Wheel in this class, girl. You will address me as Mistress Spirit. Now get your scroll out.
But I don't...
Nona patted her habit as if the items she required might somehow have been stowed in one of the interior pockets without her knowledge.
Quickly!
Sister Wheel slapped an iron hand on Jula's desk in the front row and began to advance on Nona, weaving her path between the desks, the girl's head down as she passed. Nona felt a familiar anger starting to boil deep down where her thinking never ventured. Even if she had been given such things as quill and parchment, she had never held either in her life, and could no more make the required marks with one upon the other than she could fly.
Well?
Sister Wheel, now looming above Nona, her pale and watery eyes meeting Nona's stare. Nona stood up sharply.
Novice Nona's entry to the convent was non-standard.
Abbess Glass had entered without being noticed, and now settled a hand on Nona's shoulder, returning her to her seat.
This precluded the usual correspondence regarding the supplies an entrant is expected to bring with them, Mistress Spirit.
The abbess laid a grey-plumed quill and fat scroll of parchment on the desk.
Nona will, however, be a listening pupil rather than a writing one, until such time as Sister Kettle pronounces her sufficiently advanced in her extracurricular studies. She will...
Sister Wheel's pale face reddened.
I know exactly what kinds of extracurricular activity Sister Kettle gets up to, and with whom, and I... Sister Kettle will improve Nona's reading and writing to the standard required in red class.
The abbess fixed Sister Wheel with a stare.
The matter is now closed.
Sister Wheel scowled and stumped off towards the head of the class. Abbess Glass rolled out the top portion of Nona's scroll and produced an inkpot to hold it in place. She dipped the quill, and in what seemed one flowing motion, left a beautiful confusion of lines upon the parchment, black and glistening, coiling like a vine.
"Your name,"
she said. She dipped again, and beneath it placed three very different lines, interlocked squiggles, careless where the name had been precise. The abbess produced a blotter and patted the design.
"And there is you."
Nona stared at the pattern, furrowing her brow.
"And since I am here,"
the abbess continued,
"I shall address the novices."
She followed Sister Wheel, smiling at the girls to either side.
"Some here may not yet have heard my welcome to the faith. Certainly Arabella and Nona will not have, and it will do no harm to refresh those that have."
Nona reached out a finger to trace the lines of her name. And as she did so, the larger pattern beneath her name suddenly made sense. Her face, caught in three black squiggles. A face that had last stared at her from a mirror on Raymel Taxis's wall. She blinked and stifled a laugh, wondering how she could ever not have seen what the lines meant. Perhaps writing would reveal its meaning to her in the same manner one day. Abbess Glass reached the front and shooed Sister Wheel aside to take center stage.
"Sister Wheel teaches the important details of our veneration of the ancestor. The mechanics of the thing, if you like. The hows and the whens. She does it well, and we thank her for it. It falls to me, though, to remind us all of the whys. Nona, for example, was a follower of the Hope before she came to us. And whilst the Hope is a sanctioned heresy that falls within the framework of the ancestor, we... Yes, Nona?"
Nona had raised her hand like the Biggs did when they wanted to ask a question in Nana Even's seven-day class in the village. Few of them ever did actually ask because the answer was generally, "Because I say so."
"My mother went to the Hope Church in White Lake, but I never said the words. One star is white and the other's red. Why should I kneel to it? That's what her father had said. In my village they pray to the gods who are many and have no names.
The novices tittered, as if this were funnier than their dome and golden statue. Abbess Glass pursed her lips.
Such practices are unusual in Verity, Nona. In the wild lands to the east and across the border into Scythrol, there are remnants of many faiths, and the Emperor is tolerant of them at a distance. But the ancestor...
My father hunted on the ice, and even in the tunnels that go beneath.
Nona remembered almost nothing of her father save the stories he told. None of those tales had stuck with her quite so strongly as the ones that told of the tunnels. River carved, they ran beneath the ice, drained when the waters found some better path or froze at the source. In those stories her father and his clan had hunted beasts from every tale she'd ever heard. But the best of his stories told of the missing, those who were not men and who lived on Abeth before the four tribes descended from the stars. No man had ever set eyes upon the missing, but their servants remained, a remnant now haunting the dark places beneath the ice where sites holy to the missing lay exposed once more. Such ruins could be found here and there where the tunnels ventured across the cities that the missing had carved deep into the very rock itself.
My father said that the ancestor might watch over us in the corridor, but in the dark places of this world, it's the gods that the missing left behind who matter.
There was no laughter at this, only the silence of held breath, waiting for the hammer to fall. Abbess Glass pursed her lips, as if she had tasted something particularly sour. She studied Nona a moment, raising one hand towards Sister Wheel as the nun seemed about to get her first word out around her outrage. The abbess relaxed her face into a smile.
The Emperor has forbidden worship of false idols, Nona. Much of our own history, 10,000 years and more of it, lies buried beneath the ice. A record of triumphs, follies, and a slow defeat beneath a dying sun. There are enough heresies and heathen gods of our own devising without pursuing the mysteries of creatures less like you and me than a dog is like a fish.
The same anger that had boiled out of some red place within Nona when Raymel hurt Sida began to bubble through her again. She stood up so fast that her chair would have fallen but for Clara's quick hands.
My father!
The words, hard and angular, stuck in her throat. She bit down on them. Anger had lost Nona her place in the village. Then the cultus.
I am here to address the why,
Abbess Glass continued smoothly, as if a small girl weren't standing in defiance before her, fists balled at her sides.
We venerate the ancestor because in doing so we connect with what is holy in the human spirit, what is holy in us.
You're not holy!
Nona couldn't stop the words. Warm beds and good food were too great a treasure to be sacrificed, but with them came knives in the dark and laughter behind hands, and this woman calling herself holy.
You watched Sida die! You watched her strangle and choke! Sister Wheel!
The abbess raised her voice to a shout, drowning whatever the nun had to say.
Bring me a wire cane from the blade stores!
A sharp intake of breath sounded all around the room. Sister Wheel's face split with an uncustomary grin.
Yes, Abbess Glass, yes indeed. A good choice, a fine choice for a beating.
And she hurried from the room, her speed surprising. The abbess waited for the door to close. She pulled up one of the chairs from an unused desk and sat on it, presenting a slightly comical image, portly abbess perched on child's seat.
I'm not holy. What is holy? Nona? Anyone?
Silence. Nona would have answered but found that she didn't know.
I believe in the ancestor, in the spirit of the ancestor. Believe?
Like Sister Wheel believes?
Nona couldn't keep the venom from her words. When she looked at Wheel, it seemed that something had been left out in the making of the woman. Nona felt the same way about herself most of the time, as if some part had been omitted in her construction, so wholly absent that she couldn't even say what it was, only that a void lay where it should be.
I hate Sister Wheel.
It's harder to forgive someone else your own sins than those uniquely theirs. Much harder.
You don't know Sister Wheel, Nona. You've only just met her.
Nona scowled.
I know plenty. I've seen plenty. More than you can see from up here in your nice warm convent, paid for by all the people working down there in the city and out in the corridor growing your food from the mud. What good is holy if it can't feed and clothe itself? This is a place to turn children into old women, praying for the sins of the world and never seeing them.
Some of the words were her father's, but she owned all the anger.
What good is holy if it watches my friend die? Not because she did something wrong, but because her blood wasn't good enough.
Around her, the novices' faces had frozen into a range of expressions, from horror and shock on Jula and Ruli, to amazement on Clara, and on Arabella a smile that could mean anything. Nona wanted to take back what she'd said. Even now she wanted to apologize and beg to stay, but she couldn't get the words past her locked jaw.
You're right, Nona.
The abbess nodded to herself, her attention resting for the moment on her only ring, set with a large amethyst. Nona blinked. She had been tensing for the blow or the condemnation.
If we spent our whole lives here, we would have little to offer the world and know little enough of the world to have context for our prayer.
Seeing Nona's frown, she spoke more simply.
We wouldn't understand what we're praying for. Without knowing the chaos and confusion that washes all around this plateau, our rock of faith, we could not appreciate the serenity we seek.
Abbess Glass paused and fixed Nona with dark eyes. It seemed important to her that Nona understand, that Nona believe.
I wasn't always a nun. I had a son, and I breathed for him. When we buried him, my sorrow consumed me. Was my grief holy? Was it unique? All our hurts and follies are repeated time and again. Generation after generation live the same mistakes. But we're not like the fire, or the river, or the wind. We're not a single tune, its variations played out forever, a game of numbers until the world dies. There's a story written in us. Your parents, your father and his ice tunnels, your mother and her Church of Hope, both of them, whether they loved you or left you, are in you, bone deep, remembered in your blood. The Hunska has risen to the surface in you, the quickness of some relative dead these past 10,000 years. You think your mother and father are less present?
Nona found her teeth clenched too tight for reply. Anger over her mother seethed through her, and her hands twitched for violence.
There's a story written in us, added to with each conception. It remembers and it changes us. We move to something from something.
Abbess Glass held her two hands before her side by side, palms out, thumbs folded in, very close together so that the narrowest of gaps stood between the index finger of both.
Life. She raised one hand a fraction. Death. She raised the other to match it. We spend all our years on the short journey across this gap. But look, the gap is narrow if you cross it, but follow it, and it's long, as long as you like. You and I journey across the gap, but as a people we follow it. The ancestor stands at both ends. The ancestor watches us from before the flight, before the ship hearts first beat their rhythm. That is the ancestor of singular form, the origin, the alpha. Along our journey we have become many and varied. The ancestor watches us from the start and from the end,
from beyond the death of stars in the cold dark of beyond. That is the ancestor of singular mind, the destination, the Omega. The ancestor is meaning in chaos, memory in time, and that is holy. The ritual that Sister Wheel teaches is part of that memory, our connection to it, and it is important whatever you think about the person who delivers the message. But what I really care about is the knowing behind it. We are many parts of the One. We are the steps. The ancestor is the journey. She stood and reached for Nona's hand. Come on, we'd better go. Surprise loosened Nona's tongue. Why? Where? She stepped back, suspicious. By now, Sister Wheel will have found the Blade Hall locked, gone in search of Sister Tallow, found her in the sanatorium, and recovered the key. Do you want to be here when she gets back with that wire cane? She reached the door and opened it, pulling Nona after her. Behave yourselves, girls. Mistress Spirit will be looking to use that cane and won't require much excuse. Sister Wheel will calm down soon enough. The abbess crossed the foyer to open the main doors. At least as calm as she gets, though I won't pretend that she's not the sort to hold a grudge. She carries her passion for the faith in both hands, does Sister Wheel, and any disrespect to me, real or assumed, is to her an attack on that faith, Nona. Stay on her good side and pay attention. You need to know what she teaches. They approached the abbess's house, where her cat Malkin lay sleeping on the steps. Abbess Glass paused. You can always speak your mind to me, Nona, but it will go easier on you with Sister Wheel and others if you're seen to be punished for disrespect of the office I represent. Today you will spend an hour in contemplation at the sinkhole instead of joining your class for the evening meal. Yes, Abbess. Nona had eaten a week's worth of food in 2 days. She could miss dinner and hardly notice it. She had known hunger before, true hunger. A figure came running towards them across the ground between the dome and the forest of pillars. The abbess stared at the approaching nun. You need to learn what Mistress Spirit teaches. Once it is given over, you can make it your own. You can order and prioritize the tenets of the faith to your own liking, as do we all. But first you need to know what they are. She trailed off distractedly as the runner drew close, sleeves and skirts flapping, and came to a halt before them. Sister Flint, Abbess Glass tilted her head. The etiolated nun inclined her head, seemingly untroubled by her long sprint. Visitors approach, Abbess. A judge of the High Circuit and 9 member-at-arms. Curious, the abbess pursed her lips. Not by the Seren way, nor the Vinery stair, or we would have had warning. Is Sister Oak still patrolling the cart way? Sister Flint nodded. Then our visitors have either flown here on the backs of eagles, or taken a very long walk in order to come upon us unannounced. Eagles? Nona asked. A joke, dear. The abbess frowned and looked up at Sister Flint. When will they arrive?
A few minutes.
Abbess Glass lowered herself with a little difficulty to sit upon the steps of her official residence. Fetch my crozier, Nona, will you? Just behind the front door. It's open. Nona hurried up the steps and pushed through the panelled door into a dim hallway tiled in black and white. Her footsteps echoed in the vaulted space above her as she entered. A rack of 5 identical croziers stood against the wall, a little way in. Hefty staves bound with iron hoops, the top coiling like a shepherd's crook, the flat spiral covered in plates of very thinly beaten gold, each one embossed with scenes from the Book of the Ancestor. She took the first, surprised at its weight, and hurried back to the abbess.
Thank you.
Abbess Glass took the crozier and patted the step beside her. Sit! Nona sat, and Malkin stalked away. Sister Flint waited at the bottom of the steps, the wind wrapping her habit tight about her painful thinness. Before too long they saw the visitors making their way through the pillars, ill at ease among the forest of stone. Did you know, Nona, that the stone from which those pillars are made can't be found anywhere in the corridor? It's all beneath the ice now, lost to us. Nona started to reply, then let the words fall. Abbess Glass knew she knew nothing. The approaching men wore long red cloaks and breastplates of burnished steel, their helms gleaming and ornate. They flanked a grey-haired man in a thick black robe, riding an enormous horse, one built for endurance rather than speed. A second man, also in a black robe but a thinner one, tossed by the wind, followed, leading a mule with laden saddlebags. By now, half a dozen nuns watched from the doorway of the ancestor's dome, Sister Wheel among them, having paused on her return to spirit class with wire cane in hand. The nine guardsmen arrayed themselves before Abbess Glass's steps, and the old man dismounted from his giant horse. He held himself with a degree of confidence and dignity that would put Grey Stephen to shame. Nona wondered if he was a lord or some close relation to the Emperor. A thick circlet of twisted gold strands held a white mane from his patrician's face. He regarded the abbess from beneath neatly trimmed eyebrows, channeling a slight air of distaste down either side of a prominent and angular nose. "Those are quite the grandest city guardsmen I've ever seen," Abbess Glass murmured. "I smell money here, and lots of it." The younger man came forward clutching a heavy book bound in black leather. Nona had watched him tugging it from the mule's saddlebag. "Judge Ervone Galamsis offers the Abbess of Sweet Mercy Convent his greetings and felicitations on this the birthday of Emperor Hedral Ansis, fourth of his name." Abbess Glass bent towards Nona, her voice low and carrying a smile. "Almost every day is the birthday of some emperor or other, if you dig deep enough." With a grunt, she got to her feet, using her crozier to lever herself up. "Ervone, a delight to see you again. Will you be staying to dinner? The novices would be so excited. A judge visiting us, and not just some common sort, but one-third of the highest jury in the land."
"I've come for the girl, Abbess. I don't plan to stay long."
"Girl, we have lots of those here, Ervone. I'm charged to look after them, body and soul. The convicted murderer that you helped abscond from Harriton prison 2 days ago."
"Convicted?" The abbess rubbed her chin. "There was a trial? Or was a rope merely purchased for her?"
Judge Ervone snapped his fingers and the young man hefted up his book, opening it to a page marked with a silk ribbon. He read from it, his voice precisely measured.
"In the ruling of Judge Maker, esteemed of the High Court, within the sound of the palace bells, a stateless person may be convicted by any prison official of more than 3 years' service on the evidence of 5 or more witnesses of good standing. YOM 3417.
The golden head of the abbess's staff made slow revolutions.
"Such a new cover for such an old book, Judge. Year of the Moon, 3417. Your law predates this convent. It predates most of verity. And I doubt if it has been used in the time these buildings have stood here."
"Even so, Warden James passed sentence upon the girl when she arrived at Harriton."
The judge looked towards the convent. "If you would be so good as to have the child brought out, that would be preferable to a search of the premises."
Nona realized with a start that none of the men knew that she was the one they were looking for.
"Of course," the abbess nodded. "Of course I would be glad to help. But it seems to me that even in these modern times, and even with a law so old, would one not require someone to have been murdered in order to hang another person for murder? Or has poor Raymel gone to his accounting with the ancestor?"
The judge waved a bored hand at his assistant, who turned to another page marked with a length of silk.
"YOM 3702, Judge
Arch Linsus rules that in cases of attempted murder, the perpetrator may hang for murder if the original conviction were based upon the reasonable belief that the victim would die. Thurin Taxis must have paid out a considerable weight of gold to have your clerks scouring the law books with such diligence, Ervone. What man would not want justice for his son?
The judge inclined his head, apparently solemn and thoughtful. Nona wondered if he had ever met Raymel Taxis.
Lord Taxis is prepared to overlook your interference with the due execution of the law, Abbess Glass, and out of respect for the church, I do not propose to press the case on behalf of the city. However, you would be well advised to place the murderer known as Nona Reeve into my custody without delay.
Nona ground her teeth tight against the urge to spit. Partness Reeve had given her nothing she wanted to keep, his name least of all.
I would never disobey the High Court, Ervone.
Abbess Glass stopped turning her crozier. The judge snorted. Abbess Glass waited a moment, then continued.
But...
Ah! The judge shook his head.
But Nona is now a novice at the convent, and as such any and all misdemeanors, past and present, fall under the jurisdiction of church law, as do mine. I'm sorry that you've had a wasted trip. You really should stay for dinner. The girls would be delighted.
The big black book of laws hit the ground with a resounding thump.
That's her, isn't it?
The young assistant advanced towards the steps, finger pointing at Nona.
That's the little bitch who did it! Lano, the judge shook his head more in resignation than anger. I told you should not have come.
Nona stared at him, seeing the man for the first time, and finding something familiar in the narrow cast of his features, perhaps the pale fury in his eyes or the slant of his lips.
He would have killed Sida!
The anger of that moment in the Caltus returned to Nona in an instant, as if it had never left.
He deserved...
Lano Taxis moved faster than anyone Nona had ever seen. A blur of dark robes, twisting past Sister Flint even as she reached for him with reflexes to shame a cave viper. Nona barely had time to throw up her hands in front of the fingers reaching to seize her by the throat. A moment later, Lana was being hauled backward, a scream of anger choked off by Sister Flint's slim arm fastened about his neck.
What?
Abbess Glass locked into the moment of the attack, now found her voice, only realizing there had been an assault as the perpetrator was pulled away.
Nona, are you hurt?
Nona stared up at the Abbess's concern.
No. Your hands!
Nona raised them, both dripping crimson. There was no pain.
The bitch cut me! The little gutterling actually cut me!
Lano, thrown back into the arms of the closest guardsman, clutched one hand with the other, blood pulsing between his fingers.
Arrest her!
Other nuns now stood between the judge's men and the abbess, Sisters Kettle and Apple flanking Sister Flint, along with two Nona didn't know.
Lano Taxis,
Abbess Glass took a step forward.
Does your father know that you're here, young man?
Lano snarled and took a step forward, but slowly enough to allow the guardsmen to hold him back.
I see your time at the Tetragote has been well spent. Your disguise and turn of speed were both admirable.
The abbess looked to Judge Ervone, sighed, and returned her gaze to the young man before her.
It seems that both of Thurin Taxis's sons have yet to learn that beating little girls is not a pastime that can be pursued entirely without consequence. I do have a number of older girls here who would be happy to teach you that lesson, if you care to make a challenge within the Blade Hall. You don't scare me, Shella Yamel.
Lano spat the words, white-faced in fury, hectic patches of red around his eyes.
Yes, I know your line, and your family, old woman. My father could buy this rock from under your miserable collection of old hags and rejects. What Lano means,
Judge Irvone raised his voice, a deep and impressive instrument full of gravitas and authority,
is that we will return to verity and pursue this matter through the appropriate channels.
He motioned to a guard to retrieve the dropped legal tome, then used another man for support as he mounted his horse.
High Priest Jacob dines at my father's table, you miserable sack of blubber!
Lano roared. The judge waved for the men holding him to start back towards the pillars.
I'll sink you for this!
Lano let them drag him as he shouted.
I'll have that girl roasted! I'll serve her to my brother on a dinner plate! The High Priest will have you beaten from this place, old woman! You'll beg on the streets before I'm done!
Now about 20 yards off, heels dragging, Lano Taxus shook off the men holding him and stalked to the front of their party to remonstrate with the judge. The nuns watched in silence. The harsh edges of Lano's outrage stretched back across the plateau even as the men reached the pillars.
Well,
Avis Glass sat down heavily on the steps once more. She didn't seem inclined to say more. Sister Apple turned towards her, but the abbess waved her away.
You heard the man. We can expect a visit from the High Priest soon enough. A good time to clean the place up a bit and make sure everything is in order. I'll leave you in charge of that, Apple dear.
Sister Apple pursed her lips, glanced at Nona's hands, then nodded and led the others away. Sister Wheel lingered, but a gesture with the crozier sent her hurrying after the others.
So, the abbess said, patting the step beside her. You have a knife?
Nona nodded and took her place on the cold stone.
Understandable, I suppose.
Abbess Glass kept her eyes on the distant pillars.
But I must ask you to return it to the Blade Stores.
Yes, abbess. Nona looked down at her hands, conflicted. The abbess had done more to protect her than her own mother had. She might lose everything just for some peasant girl she barely knew. Nona hadn't told a lie, but even so it felt wrong to deceive her.
I will. Are you sure none of that blood is yours?
The abbess asked. Nona flexed her hands, the fingers already sticking to each other.
I'm sure. Run along, then. Put that knife back and we won't speak of it again. It's my duty and the duty of all your sisters here to protect you. You don't need a blade.
Yes, abbess. Nona quickly got to her feet.
I will.
She wanted to thank the abbess, but nothing she thought to say sounded right. And whatever had happened, Abbess Glass had still watched Sida hang. Nona ran off. The corridor wind tried to steer her. She would put the knife into Blade Hall's store straight away. But first, she would run to the dormitories and retrieve it from her bed. Chapter 10 Nona came late to the dormitory, having slipped into the bathhouse on her way back from contemplation at the sinkhole to avoid Sister Wheel, only to have the woman hold an endless conversation right outside the door with some unknown party. Nona thought she heard her name mentioned, but maddeningly the thickness of the door, the splashing of two or more older novices in the pool, and the soft but constant gurgling of the pipes kept the actual words just beyond hearing. At one point Wheel raised her voice enough for Nona to catch, "Assassin?" and a moment later, "Blood!" but after that only muttering. Eventually Sister Wheel ran out of opinions, or at least time to deliver them in, and left, allowing Nona to escape. She stepped out from the steams and instantly discovered the misery of mixing a warm, damp habit with a cold and invasive wind. Rain started to splatter about her as she passed the laundry. Despite her haste to reach the dormitories, Nona paused at the laundry side door. A nun held it open a hand's width, having stopped to finish her conversation with someone further inside.
"Ancestor, we don't want him in here again." "You weren't even here back then to see it, girl. Avis Shard hadn't the guts to keep him out. He'd have the novices over to Hart Hall for special testing, and not just the older ones."
just an Archon? As if he was like that as an Archon, what do you think he's like as a High Priest? No wonder he hates glass. They say...
The door shut again as the conversation drew the sister back into the laundry. Nona waited a minute, then another, then moved on, as wet with the rain as if she'd swum from the bathhouse. On opening the door to the red sleeping hall, she found the class chatting in various groups around the beds. A few of the girls starting to undress, but nobody in any particular hurry. Arabella's voice carried through the mix, though she was hidden by the three or four novices around her.
"Could say those things to Sister Wheel. And we got shaved just because she took your belt, Ara."
Nona saw that Jula was one of those in Arabella's circle. It stung to see her there, but what she had said was true. And the attention of a noble, an almost princess, must be very flattering to a scribe's daughter. Head down, Nona walked to her bed.
"Heard the law came looking for you." Clara, lying on top of her blankets, put down her class scroll at Nona's approach. "I hate those judges."
She set her penny spinning on the writing slate beside her, spattering the lamplight. Nona offered up a weak smile and turned to her bed. Clara patted her own.
"You look half-drowned. Use this."
She tossed over a rough grey towel.
"What did you do, Nona? Did they come to arrest you for checking the abbess? Or for being a tunnel worshipper?"
She grinned, pushing aside her hair and patted again.
"Come, tell Clara everything."
Nona pulled her wet habit off, wiped her face, rubbed at her hair, then despite her mood sat where Clara indicated. Clara leaned in close.
"A judge? A damn judge rode all the way up here to get you? What the hell did you do, Nona?"
She took hold of Nona's arm.
"And how are you still here? I don't want them to take you away."
Nona sighed. Sooner or later the whole convent would know about Raymel Taxis. She was surprised the story wasn't circulating among the novices already. Sooner or later. She would rather it was later, though.
"You're my friend?" she asked.
"I am." The grip on her arm strengthened.
"I lied."
Nona looked up. Ruli sat on the next bed now, nightcap in place, one pale strand of hair escaping.
"I wasn't taken from the village by raiders."
Clara and Ruli shuffled closer, saying nothing, and Nona started her story anew.
"A juggler once came to my village. He was my first friend,"
Nona backtracked.
"In my whole life, I'd had one friend. It's a hard thing to live as a stranger in a small village. There's nowhere to hide, nowhere you're not known. I used to think there was something wrong with me to make the other children turn me away, something more than being dark. I've never understood people, not truly, not how to be at ease with them and make them be at ease with me. Sometimes I feel as though I'm playing a part like those mummers who travel the roads, only I don't know the words properly, or how I'm supposed to act. I had one friend. I don't know if he was a proper friend, but he said he was. And nobody had told me that before, so it was something special."
"The juggler?
How old was he?"
Clara asked, leaning in with Ruli. Jula sat nearby now, watching, her expression unreadable. 22, Nona said, remembering Amondo's face, light and shadow in the brilliance of the focus moon.
22?
Clara gasped, and exchanged glances with Ruli.
"That's a grown man!"
"What was he called?"
Jula from the next bed.
"Amondo. He only stayed 3 days. He said he'd to keep travelling to find new people who would pay to see his show. But on the morning that she found him gone, my mother was very angry. I hadn't seen her like that before, at least not so bad, throwing around her baskets and cursing him. Then she saw me standing in the corner trying to be out of the way, and she said it was my fault. All of it was my fault, and that I'd driven Amondo away and that she hated me."
"Did he touch you?"
Clara demanded.
"Yes."
Nona frowned. It seemed like a stupid question. Ruli drew in a sharp breath.
I mean in a bad way, Clara said. He didn't hit me, Nona's frown deepened. He showed me how to juggle. She pursed her lips and shrugged. And when he left, I went after him. I told myself I was going to get him to come back so my mother wouldn't be so angry with me. She was cross most of the time, as though something was wrong with everything. I don't remember her laughing. Ever. But I thought if Amando came back, that might change and we could be happy. I told myself I was going to get him to come back. But really part of me hoped he would ask me to come with him. And another part of me knew I would say yes. My father told me stories, and they were different from the ones Grey Stephen would tell the village on fire nights. They were different because I knew he had been to the places he was describing, and they made me want to go too. Dad's stories made me feel that the world went on so much further than I could see, and that the corridor was a road that could take me anywhere. I could reach the Marne Sea and sail on a fishing boat, or dig emeralds from the ground in Tekris, or hunt whiters on the ice, or explore the tunnels and discover the missing. Anything. Old Mother Sybil saw Mondo leave along the Relum Trail. She told him the forest was a haunted place, but he just laughed and said everywhere had its ghosts. Nona fell into her own story as she had before, not hearing the words as she spoke them, only seeing events play out before the eye of her mind. Mother Sybil called after me to stop.
You won't catch him before he gets to the woods.
I kept running, foot wrappings soaked and muddy, flapping as I dodged the wheel ruts.
You won't catch him.
The old woman's voice lost itself in the distance. I'd been as far as the Relum Forest before. I'd gathered sticks in the margins, hunted for hedgehogs among the dry leaves, peered into the dark spaces between the boles of the trees, looking for the fairy lights that folk in the village spoke about. Seen nothing, found nothing, except for sticks. And back at the hut they'd burned the same as any others. I'd been to the Relum Forest before, but not as the sun was falling, and I'd never ventured in. Still, Amando and I both stood on the same road. We both stood beneath the same clouds, hung with sun-bright edges and rain-dark hearts. Rain comes from a dark heart. I would catch up with him before it fell. Amando had more than an hour's head start on me, and Mother Sybil proved right in her prediction. I found myself panting, sore-footed and sweaty, the trail now just a band of beaten green, winding its way into the first trees, as if it too had heard the wood's reputation and was trying to delay entering. Everywhere has its ghosts, Amando had said. But in most places those ghosts are at least hidden in the corners or tucked away at right angles to the world, waiting their moment. In the Relum Forest you could see the ghosts, patterned on the gloom beneath the canopy, the distortion of their faces frozen into the bark of ancient trunks. And you could hear them too, screaming into the silence, not quite breaking it but making it tremble. I was scared, more scared than I'd ever been of the Biggs who chased me, or of Black Will's hound that took Jenna's fingers the year before. What made me follow that trail with the sun falling and the cold wind speaking through the branches was a larger fear, one that had been with me ever since I had words to put around it. The fear that I wouldn't ever leave that village, that I would stay and grow old and bent and be put in the ground there, wasting all the years of my life as an outsider, inside. I got a few miles along the trail before the gloom thickened past the point that I could find my way. Hungry and cold, I crouched with my back to an old tree and waited. A light rain started to fall, the sort that's half ice and hits the leaves with a splat, gathering in wet clumps before it drops to ground. When you're moving in a dark and haunted forest, the urge is for every step to be taken more quickly than the last. There's a pressure between your shoulder blades. Each creak and groan is a hunter stalking you, each flutter of wind its breath, close against your neck. You want to break and run in any direction just so long as it's fast. When you're still, the urge is to be stiller. The knowledge that eyes are turned your way quietens the air inside your lungs. You make yourself small. You hold every muscle tight and you listen. Above all, you listen to the woods as they close about you. I stayed there, cramped and shivering and terrified, until the moon's focus found me. The light filtered down, slow at first, making the impenetrable gloom penetrable once more, recreating the forest around me.